Hi, welcome back to another episode of You, the Mother podcast by Abby Williams, a space dedicated to supporting, empowering, and connecting all parents in all seasons of parenthood. You can find more supportive content over on Instagram at You, the Mother, and be sure to check out youthemother.com, where you can reach out to work with me one-on-one or sign up for my group coaching. This Mother's Day, I am opening a special Mother's Day love bubble for some of the women in my community who are navigating difficult relationships with their mothers or estrangement. We will learn how to navigate some of these challenging days on the calendar. We will have community and be able to share and get perspective shifts. So I hope to see some of you there. I will put the link to sign up for that in the description of this podcast. And in today's episode, I am welcoming on Amanda Armstrong. Amanda is a neuroscience and trauma-informed anxiety and depression coach and the founder of Rise As We, a mental health coaching space. Her experience and education has led her to create a unique, research-supported, and whole human approach to healing through a specialized lens of neuroscience and lifestyle design. From completely personalized coaching to the most comprehensive mental health membership community out there, Rise As We offers the programs and support she wishes she would have had on her healing journey. You can find Amanda over on her website, riseaswe.com, and on Instagram and TikTok at Amanda on the Rise. She also has a newly released podcast that you can listen to wherever you're listening to this podcast, titled Regulate and Rewire, an Anxiety and Depression Podcast. In today's episode, Amanda and I talk all about the role nervous system dysregulation shows up in parenting. I know a lot of us struggle with feeling a little dysregulated, maybe overstimulated, some anxiety. Amanda gives us such practical tools and tips to take away from this episode and use in your everyday life. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started in supporting you, the mother. Amanda, welcome to You, the Mother podcast. I am so excited that you are here joining us because I think a lot of us struggle with our nervous system being dysregulated in parents, and maybe we don't even notice or realize it or know what that means. So I'm excited to pick your brain about this topic. But first, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
So like you mentioned, I'm Amanda Armstrong. I am a neuroscience and trauma-informed anxiety and depression coach. And so I really help individuals understand anxiety and depression through this nervous system lens, really making sense of understanding that anxiety and depression aren't necessarily these like broken pieces of ourselves, or we didn't come hardwired, you know, in a broken way. Our anxiety, our depression, our dysregulation usually makes perfect sense based on our past lived experience and our current life circumstances. And so, especially as a parent, right? So much of being a parent triggers things that we don't even remember in our childhood, but our nervous system does. And so I am the founder of Rise As We, which is a mental health practice. And we have a monthly membership and one-on-one coaching. And we work a lot with people who are maybe have felt really stuck in talk therapy for a long time, or have felt like that wasn't a good fit, and they're just craving tangible tools. And so I myself, you know, struggled with my own journey through anxiety and depression, and the mainstream support systems just fell short of what I needed to heal. And so what really flipped the switch in my own healing journey was when I learned to understand my nervous system, the role that it played in my everyday life, the role that it played in my anxiety and depression. And when I understood how that system worked, I was able to work with that system instead of constantly feeling like it was fighting against me in a really tangible way towards healing. And so the coaching I do now is really just the tools and the resources that I wish I would have had earlier on in my healing journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I talk a lot about like my own healing journey over on my platform. I feel like a lot of the mamas who are following me right now are kind of in this walk of life of a healing journey, being cycle breakers,
And I know I've said it in a lot of other podcast episodes, but I think our tiny people are definitely really good at being little trigger pushers. They're just like a bright light, and they like shine all their light through some of our holes that maybe we need mending.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's like, it's such an honor to be called in to do this work, but it's really hard.
It's really hard. And yeah. I think to give your listeners some context in terms of like where I am in motherhood as well. So I have an almost 3-year-old little boy. And then I am currently somewhere between 7 and 8 months. 30 weeks. I'm 30 weeks. Pregnancy math. I'm 30 weeks pregnant with another little boy. And because it may come up in conversation today, between my first son and this son, I actually had recurrent miscarriages. So I had 4 losses, and we ended up deciding to go the IVF route. So for any mamas out there who either, like with my first son, ended up in an unplanned C-section, has struggled with any kind of loss, especially like recurrent miscarriage or, you know, went through fertility treatment, et cetera, like just adding my name to the roster to let you know that like you're not alone and all of those things can be so dysregulating and so anxiety inducing, not only in the way that you show up as a parent, but also as you're trying to grow your family as well. Like that, those things are just hard and heavy to carry. I mean, it's hard to become a mom even when everything goes right.
No, I totally agree. Amanda, will you kind of like share with us to kind of normalize like some feelings about, you know, some of the hardships in motherhood, recurrent loss, just pregnancy and hard stuff with toddlers, even, you know, IVF. There's all these hardships that we go through in motherhood. Maybe it is mental health related, postpartum depression, issues with breastfeeding, right? The list could go on and on and on and on and on. How some of those tie back to maybe some of our childhood feelings or early life experiences? Can we kind of normalize how some of these feelings reoccur in motherhood?
Yeah. So I'll start. There'll be a way to circle, I think, back to the conversation around like losses and unknown and anxiety around, you know, especially getting pregnant after a loss. But I think what has tied the most back into like my early childhood experiences is realizing how much I don't remember, but I'm starting to remember in the way that I am, I don't want to say like tempted to show up, but my triggered reaction to my son, especially when he's having really big emotions. So for example, right, toddlers have meltdowns. 2.5-year-old little boys like just have meltdowns because you wiped their butt and they didn't want you to, or you closed the door too loud, or, you know, whatever. And I logically, I'm in the world of mental health. Like I understand nervous systems and that, you know, it's my job to be regulated and to hold space for him. And, you know, that toddlers are not to be sent away with their big feelings. They don't have the ability to self-regulate. And as a mom who's very nervous system oriented, regulation oriented, and so it's like I logically understand these things. And yet, depending on the day and how resourced I am, like my default is to send him away. Like just go to your room, just go deal with it. My default is to want to yell. Like, right, I want to be louder than you to control the situation. My default is to kind of tell him that, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, I just shut the door wrong. Like, it's not a big deal. And so in the way that I want to intentionally parent, I'm realizing I am pushing up against all of my default patterning. And I don't have any specific memories necessarily about being sent away with my big emotions. I do know as a child, I was often told I was, you know, dramatic. For context, again, I have 2, you know, pretty objectively great parents, and even really great parents only parent with the tools and the resources that they have. And so I was talking to my mom not so long ago about just a hard couple days with my son. And she's like, well, it sounds like he needs to learn about timeout, or, you know, you can just send him to his room. And I'm like, oh, bingo. Like, that's why that's my default, because that's what was done for me as a parent. And again, no shade on my mom, but I want to do different as a parent. Like you said, a lot of people listening to your podcast are these cycle breakers who we're starting to know better and we want to do better for our children. And so that's just been like really eye-opening in my own parenting, that like no matter how much I logically understand, I'm still pulled instinctively towards the things that my system knows, right? And so there is this complete unlearning and repatterning and bringing it back to the nervous system. The only way that I have the capacity to do that, to pause and to try to repattern, is because I know how to recognize that activation in my nervous system, and I have the tools that I know bring me back to a regulated baseline so that I can pause and show up intentionally instead of reactively in the way that I parent my son. And so that's, you know, kind of a long answer to that question of like, but this is how I'm seeing my early developmental, you know, kind of like experiences, trauma, whatever, you know, show up in my parenting, and also how I'm personally able to heal those things through my parenting. Because I'm able to turn to that little me and say, oh, that must have been really hard to have been sent away in your big feelings without an ability to regulate. Like, and so that's also been so beautiful. And like you said, that like, you know, these little tiny humans like shine that light in our holes, and they can be a window to so much healing that we don't remember, that we don't know is there right to do.
Right. And it's hard work, but we can do it.
It's such hard work, and we can do it, and we're going to do it so imperfectly. And so it's going to be so messy. And again, like I tease the individuals in my membership all the time. I'm like, look, like I'm the ringleader of the circus. Like, this is my business. I'm the head coach. And I still yelled at my kid yesterday, but I also, I tell my clients, like, look, you can never catch your anxiety cycle too late. And I think that the way it goes for parents is like, you can never, ever catch your unaligned parenting too late. It doesn't matter if you catch it before you're about to yell at your kid, after you yelled at your kid, a day or two later, like, you can always course correct. There's always this moment to turn back towards yourself in a self-compassionate way. There's also, I think, a lot of benefit that comes from biffing it as a parent and then turning towards your child and saying, yeah, sorry, I biffed it, right? And I mean, the other day, again, just like with my two-year-old, right? It was, I don't even remember, right? I don't even remember what the meltdown was, but at some point I like hollered his name loud, right? Trying to kind of like shock him out of this like absolute meltdown that like nothing else was pulling him out of. And he walked over and he hit me. And so it was clear, and my son is not a hitter, you know? So it was clear that like his crying dysregulation was escalated by my volume, right? It scared him. And the way that we protect ourselves, right, is fight or flight. Well, I had shut the door. I was in the room with him. He couldn't run. So what was the only thing he could do? He could fight, right? Which looked like coming over and hitting mom. And there's part of me that took a deep breath and was like, I noticed two things. A, he actually feels safe enough to fight me in the way that he can. That actually is a good thing. My child isn't afraid to kind of protect himself against me, right? And this, you know, in a little safe way. But there are children who at 3 years old, they don't dare. They don't dare go hit their parents, right? Because, so I'm like, okay, he feels safe enough to be able to go into that fight state. And two, I saw my dysregulation further dysregulate my kid. Again, reaffirming, this isn't the way that I want to parent. This isn't what I want to do. And right. I had this.
That self-awareness is really, really important to be able to have that like pause of my dysregulation is continuing this cycle for him.
Yeah. And I was able to do it because of all of the work that I've done. I was able to do this not from a place of like shame, right? Because I have gotten to this place where even in the moments that I'm not proud of how I show up in my parenting, my life, whatever, I know based on the current state of my nervous system and the regulating tools that I have, I've done the best that I can. And I'm somebody who had like just absolutely the cruelest inner critic through my 20s. Like, I was never good enough. I was never doing enough. I was always falling short. Everybody else was better than me. And so the fact that I have been able to get to a place where I turn to myself pretty quickly with self-compassion is just testament that anybody can, like that anybody can cultivate this. And for me, this came through, again, understanding, I'm a pretty logical, analytical person, through understanding my nervous system how it is has been impacted by my past life experiences, how my current life stressors impact it, and that all of our reactions do have good intent based on our programming. And if that good intention is not a pattern that is appropriate or is wanted in our present life, well, then there's things we can do about it. But this specific instance with my son was so beautiful to watch, because I like sat there, as he's again have done, I can't do much. The distraction's not working. The come give mama a hug isn't working. So I just sat there and I did my own regulation, right? I put my hand on my chest and I just took some deep breaths. And I kind of made the plan for how I wanted to repair, right? And I like reflected and I just reminded myself, like, it's not your job to fix his emotions. It's your job to hold safe space while he rides this wave. And he will not, like, in those moments, you have to remind yourself, like, he won't scream for 7 hours. He won't. It feels like in that moment, because every minute feels like an hour. I'm like, he will get to a point where he's like, he's done. And who do you want to be? How do you want to be when he gets there? And so, again, realizing you can't logic, right? When your toddler is in that state, or even your teenagers, even adults, right? When we're in that state of dysregulation, our logical brain goes offline. Literally, it goes offline, which is why like traditional talk therapies or mindset work fall so short for people's like anxiety journey, is because when you're in that state, you don't have access to that logical part of your brain. And so this is a long toddler walkthrough, but right, like just realizing my job was just to occasionally offer like, I know you're angry. It's okay to be angry. And if you want help to calm down, mom is here, right? And he ignores some, even sometimes those totally regulated offers escalated him. No big deal, right? Again, it's not my job. It's not a reflection of whether I'm doing a good job or not, whether he's calming down as fast as I want him to. And eventually I did the, you know, mom's here. I'm here if you want a hug. And what did he do? Okay, mama. And he turned. He was ready for it. He sat there. I made my big breaths loud so that he could mirror them. I just held him for about 3 minutes. And I said, do you want to talk about what happened? And I said, do you know why we had to come to your room, right? You ran and sat in the middle of the road. It's my job to keep you safe, right? And that's why I picked you up and picked your bike up and we had to come inside. And then I said, and mom yelled, huh, did that scare you? Right. And so I created this narrative, not that mom yells when you don't listen, right? But mom yells when mom has a hard time calming down. So my son's name is Cade. And I said, Cade, do you want to help mom take a few deep breaths so that she can stay calm? Because I don't like when I yell either, you know? And so again, I think just this generation, right? I'm in my 30s. It was, well, I yell when you don't listen. And that's the messaging that we got, right? Was that like, our parents' inability really to regulate their own emotions was whether we were good or not, whether we were, you know.
Yeah. And that wasn't our responsibility.
And it's not our responsibility as kids. And again, no shade on our parents. Like, we're learning, we're doing better. But the reality is I know better. And so I do have a responsibility for my children to do better. And that's been a really beautiful way. And this was probably five days ago. He has brought up two or three times, oh yeah, mad mommy yelled, right? And not going to this place of like guttural guilt, like just getting down on his level and being like, yeah, she did. Do you remember why she did that? She didn't take her deep breaths, right? And he's a month from being three.
So now he's learning.
He's learning.
That when we get mad, we take deep breaths. Or we get shouty and that's not nice.
And we talked about the hitting. And right, and so it's like, I have been just absolutely blown away by how much my almost three-year-old can get when I'm able to get to his level, explain it in a way. And we don't look like my son will get to a place where he takes deep breaths, but in the middle of a meltdown, when I tell him to take deep breaths, like not a chance, right? But the only reason he has access to that regulation skill is because we practice it when the boat's not on fire. We practice it when we're not having meltdowns. And I started practicing this with him when he was like 18 months, maybe even a little younger. And we started with just, I'd put a piece of my hair in front of his face and I'd be like, can you blow mommy's hair? Can you make it move? Right. And then when we were at dinner, we had candles one night and I was like, can you blow on the candle, but don't blow it out. Just make it dance. And what I'm teaching him is breath control, because I know how important breath control is to our, to changing our physiology in our nervous system. And so making it playful and then bringing it in those moments of need for regulation, not only for my kid, but for me, right?
Right, right. Amanda, I love like this whole example of this like toddler meltdown, mom yells, right? Because we've all been there. We've all been there. Every parenting guru, expert, whatever, every mother has been there. And that you didn't sit in that space of mom guilt, like, oh, great, I yelled at my kid. And then we know how that can spiral out. But instead using our messy moments to be these teachable, great moments also, you know, because I think that there is so much power in when we show up and get it right the first time. And there's equally so much power when we are messy and we're able to teach them what it looks like to be accountable for our actions, to apologize, to come back and, you know, do the repair. Those are just like so important and powerful pieces as well. So thank you for like sharing that messy mom moment with us. And I did want to kind of circle back on, you know, we're talking a lot about your ability to notice when your nervous system is dysregulated and then utilize some of these tools to regulate yourself. For the mamas who are listening who might not know, what does that look like when my nervous system is dysregulated? How do I know? Can we help them understand what that looks like and give them maybe a couple tools to start practicing when they're feeling that way or when they are calm so that when they are feeling that way, they have some tools to tap into?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to provide just kind of like a regulation framework, and then I want to apply it to specifics and motherhood and how people can explore. So when it comes to regulating your nervous system, we help our clients create two very specific and distinct toolboxes. And I refer to them as your proactive and your reactive toolbox. And so your reactive toolbox, these are the in-the-moment tools, like I'm already there. I'm already dysregulated. I'm already anxious. I'm overstimulated. I'm overtouched. Like now what, right? Those are the in-the-moment tools that we need to reverse that spiral of dysregulation and just bring ourselves down. And then we have our proactive tools. And this is, you know, that term that like moms roll their eyes out, self-care, right? And I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of moms that have shared with me, like, I don't have time for self-care. I'm like, okay, it's not about having time for self-care, and it's not about doing more. It's about just doing different, right? And so the reality is, though, you can have all of the reactive tools in the world, but if you aren't getting as well-rested as you can in the stage of motherhood that you are, if you aren't, you know, managing some of your like productivity-based self-worth, if you aren't choosing what matters most, a clean house or a calm mom, right? You can't, right? You absolutely can't do it all, and there are lifestyle practices, right? Like movement, getting outside, sunshine, all of these things create an environment where your nervous system can regulate and can heal. And so knowing that there is no one singular way to like regulate your nervous system, which is beautiful and frustrating. I mean, I'd be a gazillionaire if I was like, check these boxes and you can heal everything. And it has to be so personalized, which is like the specialty of my practice is personalizing these tools, because your life looks different than mine. Your stage of motherhood looks different than mine. And giving you some like blanket statement that like, well, exercising for 30 minutes a day is going to like help. And you're like, cool, thanks. Don't have the capacity to do that right now. Like never going to happen. Thanks for adding one more thing and one more way I'm falling short for myself and my family. And so realizing that there are things you can do in like 3 minutes a day. And so before I get into how to know you're dysregulated and tools that can help you regulate, I want to touch on some of these proactive pieces that I think any mom can start doing today. Any parent can start doing today, any person, right? One is you already go to the bathroom a handful of times a day, right? So that's a form of self-care, right? Your body gives you an urge, you got to go. Can you change the way that you do that? Do you take into your bathroom? Are you taking your phone? Are you sitting on the toilet and spiraling about how stressed out you are? How much? What if you, every time you sat down on that toilet, you said, How am I doing and what do I need? When I look at moms in the eye and I say, when was the last time that you asked yourself, how am I doing and what do I need? 50% of them immediately burst into tears. They don't know. They can't remember the last time they asked themselves those questions because they're so busy focusing on meeting those needs for other people. And so the ways that we come into conversation with our body so that we have that awareness to be able to regulate is by building this skill called interoception. And interoception is really just the ability to answer, how do I feel right now? How do I feel right now? And so if you are somebody who's like, I don't have time for self-care, well, don't do more. Don't do more, mama. Do different. Can you just even one time go to the bathroom and say, how do I feel right now? What do I need? You might not be able to meet that need, but this simple act of checking in and saying, how do I feel right now? Even if the answer is, I feel so overwhelmed and so overtouched, I feel out of control right now. It's okay that that's the answer that comes back. What we're doing is we're building this muscle of checking in, because until we can check in, we can't change anything. And so
that's when you strap those babies in the car and you go,
you go for a ride. Or you leave your baby outside the bathroom door, knowing that they're safe, but letting them cry because you just need a moment, right? Like, it's okay. It's okay to walk away from crying babies sometimes because you need a moment. Even in all of my things, right? I walk away from a completely dysregulated, upset son because I know if I don't, I'm mad mama. And I don't want to be mad mama. I would rather be mama that walks away for a moment and can come back as regulated mama in that moment. And so looking at proactively your life, the things that are the, you know, that are important to you, and getting really clear on what matters most. And you're going to just have to start letting some stuff go. And exactly what that looks like is a little different. And this is where kind of coaching or support can come in, because we've got our blinders on a lot, right? How can you do the things that are important to you, but in a different way? Because you do need capacity to regulate your nervous system. And then, so how do I know if my nervous system is dysregulated is a great question. And for most of us, it's most of the time, unless you've done intentional work to regulate. But anytime that you are feeling irritable, anytime that you're feeling reactive, anytime that you are really antsy, also when you're numb, when you're dissociated, when you're mindless scrolling, right? That's another form of dysregulation. So we have states of like fight, flight, and freeze, right? Fight and flight, this is an activated dysregulation. This is our nervous system wanting to mobilize. This is where we're angry, we yell, we're overstimulated. And when we become so overwhelmed or so overstimulated that we don't think that we can actually control it anymore, that's when we shut down into that kind of like freeze state or shutdown state. And that's when we dissociate, when our kids are talking to us and we just don't even hear them, you know, when we zone out. And again, there's no shame in those moments. Like, that's also your nervous system in a protective mechanism of, you know, I can't handle one more thing. And so again, flexing this muscle of, where am I right now? Am I activated or am I shut down? Because different regulating tools will work depending on which state you're in. And so being able to identify that is really helpful. And so if you are in this place where you're like, I just yelled, or like, I'm going to yell, I'm there. There are, just like there's hundreds of different exercises you can do in a gym, there are hundreds of different regulating practices. But what the ones that I find are most helpful in my home when I'm with my child is taking a deep breath. And so I know everybody rolls their eyes at this, but I'll give you some context behind the physiology. So every breath you take, when you inhale, your heart rate slowly speeds up. And when you exhale, your heart rate slows down a little bit. And so every breath that we take speeds up, kind of activates our system, and then regulates our system. It's a way that we stay in balance. And so something called an extended exhale breath is when you exhale longer than you inhale, it slows down your heart rate longer than it sped up. Well, that sends a very tangible, measurable, physiological signal to your body that says, ooh, we're a little safer than we thought. We can downshift. We can downregulate. Now, when you are about to just like rage at your children, you may not be able to take a deep breath. But if you can learn how to catch that activation earlier, a couple deep breaths, an extended exhale breath could be really, really helpful because you actually shift your physiology. And when you shift your physiology, when you change the state of your nervous system to be more regulated, that brings that logical part of your brain back online. It helps you to feel more calm, more present, and in control. And something I think is really helpful to understand too, that when you're feeling activated, right, not the shutdown dysregulation, but you're feeling activated, what's happening in your system is it's preparing to mobilize. Your heart rate is changing. Your blood pressure is changing. Your respiration is changing. Even the optics in your eye are changing. Your pupils are dilating and you're getting tunnel vision. Well, when this physiology changes, so does our psychology, right? We start to be more tunnel visioned. We start to feel like we have to control our children more or their decisions or situations more. And so sometimes when you're in a higher state of dysregulation, taking a deep breath actually isn't the right tool because that's a pretty low level calm tool. And when your nervous system, it doesn't know the difference between a screaming child and a tiger. If you try to take a deep breath when you're really activated, your nervous system's gonna be like, you're not getting the memo. You're not getting the memo. We need to run or fight for our life right now. And so a really powerful shift is leaning into the mobility of that. So realizing that you're in a mobilized state, your body thinks you need to move to save your life. And some tools you can do again in your own home is A, walk to the kitchen, right? Actually move your body. I'm not like, go do a 20-minute workout. Like, no, your baby's screaming. Like, that's not realistic. Go walk to the kitchen. Can you go walk outside really quick? There's a practice called somatic shaking. So what we see in the world of mammals is that they actually shake to discharge excess stress energy. And this is something I'm teaching my son to do. We do wiggles, right? It's somatic shaking, but we do wiggles before nap time when he's just absolutely neurotic and off the walls. And so I'll do the same. If I'm feeling like I'm going to absolutely lose it, I will just kind of like shake my hands, almost like I'm flicking off water in the moment, and just give my whole body a little shake because my body needs to move. It needs to discharge the stress energy to help me wind down. And one other tool that I'll give is go to the kitchen and put an ice cube in your hand. So if you can't really lean into movement, right? If you can't go for a walk or shake it off or, you know, do a couple jumping jacks, this sounds ridiculous, but it meets our nervous system's need to mobilize. Then you can go to the kitchen and grab an ice cube. Hold the ice cube in your hand. It's uncomfortable. Basically, instead of meeting our system with an intensity of movement, we're meeting our system with an intensity of sensation. And so that cold in your hand or popping a really sour candy in your mouth kind of shocks the senses, pulls you out of kind of that like anxiety space, and it gives you a moment to recalibrate. And there is never going to be like one tool that takes you from a 10 to a 2. Right. And so what we call this tool layering in my practice, and we help clients identify and create what we call a regulation game plan, right? Just like you've got a game plan for when you're sports. It's like, how do you know when you are at an anxiety level 1, 2, versus 3? Okay. Well, when I'm at a 1, I'm just kind of starting to get irritated and I feel a little bit of a tightening in my chest. Like I kind of want to yell, but I'm not going to yell yet. I know. And when I'm at a 2, I'm elevating my voice. Now I'm feeling a tension in my jaw. And when I'm at a level 3, like I've yelled, I'm explosive. I feel the need to escape, right? Or I feel the need to spank my children, right? A lot of us are trying to break patterns. So I know that I'm at a 3 when either I've done those things or I'm feeling an extreme urge to do those things. And then in just a separate column, what regulation tools work best when I'm at this level? And helping our clients identify, okay, well, if I'm at a level 1, I totally can do that extended exhale breath. But when I'm at a level 3, I actually need to go and like push against a wall. I need to send that energy somewhere. So I'm going to just step into the other room really quick and I'm going to put my hands on a wall and push into that wall as hard as I can. And then I'm going to step away and I'm going to kind of shake it off. And then maybe I can take a few deep breaths, but I have to let my system push against something, right? And I don't want that to be my children. I need to discharge this energy. And then I might be able to take a few deep breaths and show back up in a more intentional way to repair whatever. And so this, but all of this starts with in the morning when you're sitting on the toilet, these simple moments of how do I feel? How do I feel and what I need? And even if you don't meet that need, and even if the way that you feel is a frustrating answer, it's important to start to cultivate this communication with your body and an acknowledgement that you have needs, even if you don't know how to meet them yet. And then starting to practice some of these in-the-moment tools and figuring out which ones work best for you in your environment, meet the needs of your nervous system. And that can take.
And there's like no shame in like not knowing, you know, like learning all of this now. You know, I'm also in my 30s and like very much learning alongside of my children. But we did kind of come from, and, you know, a lot of well-intentioned parents, but who didn't know some of these tools, who didn't have this education, who didn't have the phones in their hands that like they're just getting access to all this education and information at a rate that we are. You know, we are at an advantage where we do know more. And so there's no shame in learning all of this right now or being or struggling with this while parenting. But it is such a beautiful call-in to learn in alongside your children. And teach them while you're learning, you know, mom's feeling really overwhelmed right now. I'm going to go push against the wall. Do you want to join me? You want to do that
too? And sometimes my kid is mad. You know? No, mommy, stay. I love you. And it's mommy's job to help mommy stay calm. And sometimes that means I do need to walk away when you don't want me to. And I'll be back, right? It's that like, I'll be back. And you come back, you go do what you need to do, and then you come back. And it's this like acknowledgement that sometimes even you take care of you at the inconvenience of someone else. And the someone else for now is their child, is your, you know, is them, but they're going to learn these patterns that it's actually okay for them to inconvenience someone else to take care of themselves too. And that personal responsibility for the way that they're showing up is so powerfully modeled by us.
Yeah, I agree. And I really loved that you were talking about kind of the proactive, the things that we do day to day, our practices, our routines to maintain. But life is stressful, right? So you're going to have a big stressor that comes. Maybe it's your children, maybe it's your job, maybe it's your relationship, maybe it's past trauma, whatever. Stressors come up, and then what do you do on the tail end to re-regulate and whatever? So I love that you are talking about both sides of kind of this, you know, I call it like my stress, you know, it's like a hill for me, right? That we're like baseline, and then there's a stress, and then how are we going to go back to baseline? And that our recovery for stress needs to be like equal mm-hmm. to the stress. And so are there practices that you put in place on the tail end to recover? You know, you talk about some of these tools that we can put in our toolbox. And I love that so many of them were just like so tangible and like realistic things that we can do. We can go to the kitchen and grab the ice cube. I love that one. But, you know, now we've gone through a big stress. Maybe we get back to regulated by doing the tools that are in our toolbox. Is there things that we should be doing after the stressor to recover and go back to like that nurtured place?
For yeah. Ourselves? And I think that this is just a further layering of the tools. I mean, once you've reset, right? So we talked about what it feels like in your body when you're dysregulated, right? And it can feel like a total numbness and detachment, very dissociated. It can also feel like this, I'm going to flush my kid down the toilet or send him through the wall, right? Like, and when you're regulated, you feel more calm, more present. You feel connected to your body, aware of your surroundings. You feel resourced. So each one of our nervous system states has a correlating story. And for many of us, we've trapped ourselves in our head because it's safer to be there, right? The body is what holds the wounding. It's what holds the hurting. It's what causes us, you know, holds the sensations. And so we've intellectualized our dysregulation and we've intellectualized our anxiety. And we have to come back and work with our physiology, and learning how your physiology works empowers you to do that. But a lot of us are going to recognize it in our brain first. And so I think briefly I want to touch on, you know that you are in a regulated state when you're thinking thoughts like, I got this, no big deal. You might be irritated with your kid, but you're like, nah, we've done this. We played this game. You know, you can handle your life. When you're in that activated state, that mobilized state, this is where you're thinking thoughts like, I have to right now or else, right? Like, this is where a lot of that urgency is. I'm not good enough unless. And then when we're in that shutdown state, we're thinking thoughts more like, it doesn't matter. I don't matter. Who cares? I can't cope with this. It's so overwhelming. And so when you kind of get to the other end of that stress cycle, if you're in a place where you're thinking thoughts, like you feel pretty grounded in your body and you're thinking thoughts like, whoo, that was something, but like take that deep breath and on to the next, you can be done. Like you don't have to keep, you know, kind of like picking at the scab of like, well, I need to do more and more and more to reset. No, like you're reset enough. And if you are confident enough in your toolboxes, guess what? We go through that hill of stress and reset. It's okay if that happens 42 times a day. Do you get to that reset? And it's when you don't get to that reset that it starts to store that stress energy, right? When it's really, I think, kind of this statement of like, you know, trauma gets stored in the body. And people are like, what does that even mean? And essentially what it means is anytime as a child, you had an overwhelmingly stressful event. And what I mean by overwhelmingly stressful is you didn't get that reset. So a healthy stress cycle is there's something that triggers a stress response, right? Be it somebody yelling, overstimulation, a car swerving into your lane, right? You activate to meet that need. And then that stressor or that threat passes and you reset. No big deal. Anytime we don't get that reset or another stressor is introduced before we get that reset, right? We enter this kind of chronic stress cycle where it's like activated, stressed, almost reset, activated, stressed. That extra stress energy gets trapped in our fascia, in our tissues, in our muscles, right? Because again, anxiety isn't a head thing. It's a body thing. Right? Your physiology is preparing to fight. And when it doesn't get to discharge that survival energy, that stress energy, it stores it. This is where a lot of our chronic pain, our tension comes from because our muscles never got to release. It just stayed prepped to fight and to flee. And so this is something that can be helpful in the way that we also hold space for our children, right? It's okay that our children get really, really activated. Can we hold space long enough for them to find that reset? And this is why it's, I think, so important for me, at least, to help my son at an age-appropriate way when he does come down from it to go back to that situation. Because I know a lot of times we're like, okay, they're chill, like just move on with the day. But I want to provide my son context for what that experience was like, why it needed to happen so that he really gets that reset. And so, that's all to say, like, if you can get that reset, you can get that reset, go on with your life. But if you feel like that situation has passed and yet you still feel active in your system, right? So the situation has passed, you're no longer going to yell at your kid or whatever, but you're still feeling that activation and you haven't, you're still not at baseline. The situation has passed, but you haven't reset from that stress cycle. That can be where, you can move into some of those gentler tools, you know, whether that is, you know, breath. I go sit on my porch, right? And sitting on my porch does a few things. A, it moves me. I change locations. B, it works with your visual system. Remember I said a while ago, when you're in that stress response, your eyes dilate and your vision narrows. Well, simply sitting on my porch without my phone and looking around, that accesses my periphery. Well, when I have access to my peripheral vision, when I'm scanning my environment, that changes my physiology. That tells my body I'm safe. That helps me to reset. And if you can't go outside because you've got a young kid, you can do that sitting in a room. You can sit on the couch and just slowly scan the room, taking a couple deep breaths. Our respiratory, our breath system, and our visual system are the two strongest levers that we can pull to communicate to our body physiologically that we are safe. because they are the two systems that are the most quickly shifted when our body feels like it's not safe. And so I think once we get through that stressful thing, continuing to just layer on regulation tools until you get to that place where you can just kind of take a bigger breath and you're like, whew, right? We've all taken that exhale and you have access to thoughts like, we're good. We made it through. We'll make it through again the next time. Oh, that was a rough one though. And once you get to that place, really don't try to keep doing more. Just go back to your life because you're going to have to ride that roller coaster again as a parent, probably not too far from now.
Right. Amanda, I love all of these tools and all of this information that you have provided in this episode, because I think a lot of us, all of us, I would argue, are on this journey in some way. And I know a lot of my listeners are healing alongside of parenting, and it gets even harder and a little messier. So thank you for providing just such realistic and tangible tools that people can tap into. I know that you provide so much more on this topic over on your page and your platforms. Can you tell my listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my both Instagram and TikTok handle is Amanda on the Rise. And then my website is riseaswe.com. So riseaswe.com. And I actually just launched my own podcast. And so if you go to Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts and look up the show Regulate and Rewire, this is a podcast that is dedicated to high-level education like this, to pulling back the curtain. There is nothing that I teach behind a paywall within my membership or within my one-on-one coaching that I'm not going to teach on that show and talk about on that show. I believe in making this education and this information as accessible to everybody, right? I always teach people, like, people don't pay me for information, right? They pay me to support them and to hold space for them and the personalization in this journey. And so if you want to learn more about the nervous system, that show is going to be an incredible place to go and to learn. And I have on my list of episodes, you know, to talk about, you know, nervous system regulation is parenting and how do you understand your child's nervous system enough to support the development of that. And so there's a lot of really exciting conversations coming to that space as well. But I would say kind of Instagram, my website, and this podcast are going to be great places for your listeners to find more if they want it.
I'm really excited about your podcast. I'm excited to be a listener. So thank you for gifting that to the world and providing all that information, you know, because like what you were saying at the beginning of the episode, that there is only so much that talk therapy can do. And, you know, we do really need to move into this space of some of the somatic work. So thank you so much for providing that to the world. Thank you again, Amanda, for joining me. This was a lovely chat. And thank you for helping me support you, the mother. Thanks.